Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of the Disc Golf Answer Man. I am Bobby Cool, Daddy Slick Breeze, and tonight I have with me just Eric Oakley. And that's just okay. So
L-E-Y. O-A-K-L-E-Y.
Robert is taking a break this evening, and so but Eric wanted to get on and talk a little bit of OTB and answer a few questions. We have just a handful of questions. Also, if you're not a subscriber, you need to hurry up and be a YouTube subscriber, but I guess you can kind of take your time because we have reached our milestone of 1,000 subscribers. So super excited about that. And if you've been paying attention, we've been trying to get 1,000 subscribers on YouTube so we can, for once, we can do a little more things on YouTube. And for two, so Eric Oakley can give away a Dynamic Discs Combat Ranger bag that he has had at his house for the longest time. So he's ready to get rid of that thing.
Needs a home.
Needs a home.
Needs to be filled up with discs and be on the course.
I know. So now we're going to wait till we have Robert on the show, and that'll be in a couple weeks. That way he can celebrate with us. And then by then, of course, I just found out today that we hit the 1,000. So I'm going to figure out a way to get in there and pick a winner. We'll pick a winner. We'll announce the winner, and then we'll get his mailing information and get all that taken care of. So
I mean, or hers, or days.
Or hers.
Mailing yeah.
Whoever wins, that person will win. Subscriber will win the bag. And yeah, so it'll be exciting.
Or aliens, you know, could be from, they could be out of this world.
Do we have people? Maybe we had some aliens.
Do we have intergalactic shipping?
Yes. You made me think of the
or she will not come with the bag. Or she is not available.
No. Made me think of the Beastie Boys song, the intergalactic, planetary, intergalactic. Oh, I love that song. That was a good song.
It's a good one.
Anyway, so how are you doing, Mr. Eric Oakley?
I'm doing good. I just got done. I'm actually up in Seattle, Washington, hanging out at a friend's house. Got done playing the OTB Open in Stockton, California, and just ripped up here just to have a nice little week off before I head back down to Portland for those. OTB was awesome. Really great event. I mean, had drama on both sides to see Simon get his win and Paige and Natalie battling it out was really, really fun to watch. Like I was glued to my phone pretty heavily. Yeah. So yeah, it was definitely well worth the watch. Yeah. And it runs us to a place where we talk about like course design and everything, which I'll wait on, but it was all in all great event. I played decently. I had a struggled first round, but then I was able to kind of pull it together for the next two rounds to play some solid golf and just kind of get some things in place for, you know, future for the upcoming tournaments. So gotcha. it was all positive. I had great cards too, so that was also very fun. Got to play with some good people.
Nice, good. Well, I had a great weekend. I did not get to play any pickleball or disc golf. It was a rainy weekend.
So what'd
here.
You do?
I ended up celebrating my girlfriend's birthday. So had some fun doing that. Yeah. So, and nice. I was awarded the great gift giver. I got a very thoughtful gift. And so little.
Did it, was it the thing you mentioned from?
The mortar and pestle they got. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did I tell you guys that that got delivered to the wrong apartment?
No, you just said it didn't show up.
Yeah, it didn't show up, and I made a report for it, and then like 3 days later, got a call from the office that said someone said they got a box that was supposed to go to you, and I was like, yes. I walked, went up there and grabbed it, and it was for sure it. So I gave it to her on Friday night, and it she loved it. She thought it was awesome. She thought it was. She immediately put it, displayed it on her fireplace mantle, and yeah, so it was a good gift. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. So, we had a question come in just because we only had four, but now we have five questions. So, yeah, we're good
Sweet.
To go.
Sweet. Let's run it. Do you want to jump into that? Do you want to talk about OTB? Do you want to mix
it in? Let's do a couple questions, and then we'll do some OTB talk.
Run it.
Man. All right, guys. Appreciate you always sending in the questions. Go to discgolfanswerman.com. Submit those disc golf questions. We will get them on the air. First one is from David. I recently played in a tournament and came across barbed wire wrapped around the base of a tree. There was no other barbed wire in the area. There was also no mention of the barbed wire by the TD. May not even have known the barbed wire was there as the tree was not near the main line for the hole. My disc came to rest at the base of the barbed wire. I could not take a legal stance without risking injury. My card agreed I get 2 meter relief with no penalty. So that's what I took. After the round, I could not find barbed wire in the rules. I also could not find the 2 meter relief in the rules. Can you please advise if I played this correctly, what PDJ would apply here? And do you get 2 meter relief from barbed wire?
So you do get relief from areas that can be deemed unsafe. And it's not 2 meters. It's generally the first available lie that is safe behind that point. So where I learned this was actually on an old coverage from a European event from back in the day, where I think it was Avery Jenkins. His disc landed in a giant ant pile, a huge ant pile. So he could not step behind his mark and play from there because it is dangerous at that point. Like, you might not be that, there might not be like ants that bite or anything, or it's that, but you shouldn't mess with them, right? We just take your lie behind and then throw your putt from the first available spot that is safe is the way I'd play it. Do I think you guys played it incorrectly? Not necessarily. You guys might have mixed up some of the rules, but what I believe happened there is your card made a call to allow you to play safely, and that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to dive into the super, super intricacies of the rules and to say, like, well, technically you should contact the PDGA and you didn't do this or that and the other. It's like, no, you as a card made a call. Everyone was on board. I don't think that you necessarily gained an innate advantage. You were doing everything you should to stay safe. And that is the most important factor there.
There you go. All right, next one comes from David M. And this one, he says, while playing a sanctioned event, your card sees a lightning strike in the distance. You don't hear a horn blow, but knowing the rule requires a 30-minute suspension of play, you mark your disc and walk back to the tournament central. Upon arriving, the tournament director says, it'll be fine. We're going to keep playing. Should you go play in the lightning and hope for the best, or disregard the TD and wait for the required 30 minutes? What would the consequences be for disobeying the TD? I would hope a TD wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I would say it's okay to DNF from said tournament. Like, we have things in place and insurance in place through the PDGA that can keep people safe, but your life isn't worth that. People have, the lightning has struck on clear days and killed people type of stuff. So let's not just even come close to letting it, let's not find out type of thing.
I wonder if this is a real scenario, because we've had that before where people send in questions and they ask it very vaguely, but we end up finding out that it like really happened.
It was real. Our opinion. Like, I hope it wasn't.
I hope that person isn't running tournaments anymore. No, right? No, I would not want that person running tournaments.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, there you go.
Baskets at dawn. The chat's going. I love it. Duel with pistols.
All right. So, what did give us your thoughts on? Now, you said you played fairly well at OTB, but give us kind of a bird's eye view of the experience as a whole.
So, let's look at this as I've had a weird month of my last tournament. Was the Dynamic Disc Open before this. I planned on playing both Goat Hill and Masters Cup. I was supposed to be playing 4 tournaments in a row.
Whoa.
And that didn't happen. I had COVID and I had to miss out on those events. So the last time I played was at a time when you couldn't control your disc. It was outrageously windy and it was not very enjoyable. And it just was tough. It was like really, really tough. And come back to my first round at OTB. We have 20 mile an hour winds with gusts into the high 20s, maybe even 30 mile an hour gusts. Like it was probably more sustained, like 15 to 18 mile an hour with gusts like 25 plus. So I go all this time getting excited about playing, and then I go back to another round where I feel like I have no idea where some of my discs are going to go.
Really?
Just because the wind is crazy. Yeah. It's just, it gets to that point where it almost feels like it's too much wind. And I was very, frustrated. I actually had a couple great birdies, which was great. And then I finished the round with two bogeys on 17 and 18. But I had good drives on both of those holes, and bogeying them like hurt. So I was like a little salty in that regard. But I just like hit this point of I was so tired of feeling like a lot of what was happening was out of my control. And that's what playing in the wind feels like sometimes. Yeah. In that type of wind, it doesn't feel like I have a chance to really control what's going to happen. I don't get to dictate my fate. Go to round two and three, the wind was very down, probably like, you know, sustained 6 miles an hour with gusts like into the, you know, teens maybe at most. So it was like very manageable. Sometimes there was gusts that you just had to deal with, and that's just a part of it. But I felt very in control, and the game started to make more sense, and I started to get excited about disc golf again. So that was really, really cool to see. And like, I had a very clean, round two, bogey free, five down, which was awesome. And then I had a little bit of a rockier round three, but I, you know, still was able to get to 200 par, which is a solid score out at Swenson. So it leads me to this point of we keep making these courses more and more difficult. We are finding ourselves in these places where courses are getting harder, and they feel at times impossible when the conditions are at the extremes. Mm-hmm. And granted, round one, it was predominantly windy in the morning, and then it calmed down a little bit in the afternoon. So there was a hole that we saw people playing, and both Calvin and I are sitting there watching them throw the hole, and we're like, what? It's calm compared to what we played it in. Like, we played it in a raging headwind, and they played it in almost no wind, and it's an island hole. It's a carry hole. So it was like that, but that's a part of it. That's a part of first round tee times that just happens. It could have been not windy for us and really windy for them. That has happened many times. So what we end up in this place of we are playing these difficult courses, we're seeing these conditions change, and you just have no idea what is good. Like, when conditions are calm, you know what people are going to shoot. You have an idea. But when you add that level of wind, it gets difficult. And I was frustrated. But then as I got to play the course, I felt happier about it. And I started to like it more. There were plenty of things that I would have changed or made adjustments to. But that's for the future. And that's for me to post and give feedback to the OTB crew and Leonard Moyes and the Disc Golf Pro Tour to try and help make a change if they give that good feedback, because it was a very fun track. It was very demanding. And it was good. It was good. And it provided really good competition, which we were able to see people pop off, but you weren't able to see people just go, cool, 10 down, 10 down, 10 down. Thanks for the win. It was, you know, people shot, you know, if they didn't put up big numbers every single round. And that is, I think that shows that the course is really good. It's like, you know, Paige was able to win with, I think, 110 even, mm-hmm. or maybe less. I think she got under par. I'm not totally sure. I don't recall. But it was cool to see. And it provided a really good battle. Like, her and Paige and Natalie had such a fantastic battle. Both of those ladies did just put it all out there. And it was really, really fun to watch. And it's good to see Paige be humanized a little bit, but she still has that killer instinct when she sees it. You know, Paige was feeling a little off in her game, and it didn't matter because she was able to turn it on those last few holes to close the door when she saw the opportunity. You know, she just, you know, when somebody's charging like that, you just have to kind of let it happen. So it was, again, hats off to Natalie, hats off to Paige. And, you know, not to mention players like Juliana Corver had a great weekend. Yeah. And
I'd seen an interview before. I'd watched a little bit of the interviews before the event had happened. And I only caught I caught a little bit of Paige, how she wasn't even sure how she was going to do because she'd been gone doing some other stuff. And I thought it was interesting. I even posted something about what she said on the Facebook group. But so, yeah, to see her that she wasn't sure how she was going to play and things like that. And she did get a lot of practice in, and then have her come back and tear it up like that. As far as Natalie, I've seen her name before, but would that have been the only, would that have been as highest she's ever gotten as far as, you know,
oh, yeah,
on the podium and stuff like that? Okay.
She's made some splashes on some getting onto lead cards. I think she was on lead card at Vegas, but then got injured. So she had to drop out. So she's showing that she has, you know, she has the tools to be a quality player on tour and to elevate the game, which is really good to see. And, you know, I still feel like we walk in it's Paige's tournaments to win. She's just has that little bit of, she has that X factor that, you know, you just don't necessarily see from everybody.
Given the field, it's really cool to watch. Knowing what you saw as far as watching the females play, and then of course playing the course and seeing the course. Let me ask you something that probably gets asked all the time. Yeah. If Kristen Tatar had been there, what do you think she would have been on top? Do you think she would have beat Paige, or, you know, what was your feelings on that?
I think it would have been Paige's weekend way, because Paige's 10 down in the second round is something really special to see. Like those are career type rounds where she knows she went out and just shredded, and you know, it's going to be hard to beat somebody. And day one was very windy. It was very windy for the women. It was windy the whole time. And I think that would have been a big factor, because if Kristen would have had a slow start in round one, she would have just been playing catch up. And Paige played a really consistent round one to put herself in a place to play well. Even though she didn't play a super hot final round, it was, you know, what she did in rounds one and two allowed for that. And it took something truly special from Natalie to even close the gap. So yeah, it made for some great competition.
Because Kristen's never played OTB Open round. I'm trying to look at her stats from last year. I don't think she has. So I was just curious how she, is that a course that would have been played at another event for us to be able to see how? Of course, they made a lot of changes. I noticed they said
It was almost an entirely different course. Oh, okay, so there's no way to compare.
I'm just curious. I mean, I know that's always brought up when Kristen's in the U.S. playing that she's the one in contention. I mean, I know obviously knowing Paige and then of course watching her play, she's a fierce competitor, but I wonder if Kristen had been there, if there would have been just a little bit different pressure. It seems like Paige is a great pressure player, so I don't see, but I think that's a factor to know. Of course she kind of loves that type of pressure. She loves when there's big time competition. She loves playing when her and Kat are neck and neck and things like that. So she loves that type of stuff. So, but anyway, it's one of those things, like had Kristen been there, would the outcome been a little bit different as far as someone chasing her? She had Natalie on her tail, but you know, having two other people on her, chasing her down the stretch would have been interesting to watch.
Totally.
Now, and as far as,
I was going to say, so to watch Simon just go out and play as consistent as he did was, I think, also very, very impressive, because it's a course that you'd say, oh, this is perfect for Simon. But Simon is different. He's just, he doesn't throw 600-foot sky Anheuser flex shots anymore, but he throws a 500-foot laser beam or a 475-foot Heiser on a dime. Like, he didn't lose that. He's got such a great ability to throw the disc, and then his putter got hot. And that's usually what has happened when Simon has won tournaments, is like he's thrown the disc predominantly well, and the courses fit him. I look at Lake Eureka when he won Ledgestone was another example of that. And he's done that well, but also what helped propel him is when he's putting well, he does that factor of when we were so awe inspired by Ricky making putts from everywhere. It's like he has that level of putting in him when he's on. And I heard about some really, really great, great putts, that he was making. So it's awesome. It's awesome to see Simon come out and do it. It gives me, you know, hope that, you know, as we're both getting older in the sport, that there's still light for us to make those kinds of runs. And, you know, he's still a top level player, and he has such a great following. So to see him get one, it's just really cool. So hats off to Simon. And, you know, looking at the rest of the field, Aaron Gossage with the podium finish, Calvin Heimberg pushed Simon to the end, you know, just to try and make it hard. And, you know, Calvin and I stayed together, and he was talking about it. He just said, you know, in that wind, he made a couple mistakes round one. And that was, you know, he's like, that's where I lost it. I didn't lose it in round two or three. He played well. It's easy to think about the shots in rounds two and three, but he was like, yeah, it was all round one.
Yeah, talking to me about Aaron, I'm looking at his stats and like he's got some A-tier wins and stuff, but he's, oh, I guess he plays fifth at Waco and third at Dynamic Discs Open. But some of the other ones is 43rd and 57th. Is Aaron someone that we really need to watch out for? Is like,
If you put him on an open course, Aaron is he is an elite distance thrower. His short game is probably the weakest part of his game, but watching him throw a disc is incredibly entertaining. I think from on the tee, he is one of the best disc golfers in our game right now. Like as far as a backhand distance, forehand distance, he just throws the disc really well, lots of power. He's fun to watch. Nice. I definitely think he's, you know, when we go to a couple places, like I feel like he has a really good chance to do well at a place like Des Moines. I think he'll do well. He's a kind of player who would probably shred Fox Run. So like, you know, Green Mountain Championships could be a place for him to shine. Those types of places where, you know, you can really let loose and send some discs. He has it, you know, he has that extra, you know, he's just putting in the disc, you know, 100 feet farther than the next person. So he doesn't have to really rely on his short game because his approach is 100 feet shorter than anyone else on the card is. So it's again, very fun to watch. Aaron's a great player. So yeah. Definitely hats off to him. Nice. And what a finish.
All right. So one thing we're going to talk about after we do a few more questions, but I want you to think about it. And I also want to give our YouTube live viewers a chance to give us their feedback. I saw a couple of comments on it. I saw some controversy as far as the trophy. Don't say anything yet, Eric. I want you to think about what you want to say about it. I want to get some feedback from our YouTube live audience while we get these couple questions busted out. But what are your thoughts? Cool. This is the question to you, Eric, and then of course the audience, and then we'll discuss it. Is what are your thoughts on the MVP, or I'm sorry, the OTB Open trophy? That was an MVP disc, right? What is that? Why
it was saying MVP? It was an MVP disc. Okay, yes.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that here in a second. But first, let's get a couple questions taken care of.
Sweet.
Okay, so this one is from Cosmo. I have a question about disc flight for backhand versus forehand. I'll use a Verdict for the example. When I backhand a Verdict flat, it flies straight for about 3/4 of the flight, and then it peels off to the left. I'm right-handed, by the way. Forehand is a different story. To get a similar flight as my backhand, I have to hyzer flip a Verdict with about a 15-degree angle. Why'd that be?
So this is... I think what is happening in the two throws, and I could be completely wrong. This is a science thing that I might not fully understand, but this is how my brain processes it, is when throwing a forehand, there's a lot more action of snap and like ejection point that are coming in. And there's more moving factors, which causes there to generally be some off-axis torque. And I think it's just the initial explosion that is happening is sometimes a little bit greater. But the disc doesn't spin as fast as it does on a backhand. If you think about a forehand, most people, it's three fingers. You know, thumb and these two fingers are what are causing that to come out. So there is not a lot of surface area on the disc. On a backhand, there's less moving factors, but when you're talking about this part of my hand, all of these fingers and my thumb are all under the disc to throw. So I'm in here grabbing tight, and it's ripping out. That friction is causing the disc to spin a lot faster. So I think that's one of the main differences of the two. So that early action is causing the disc to maybe like do that like wobble before it stands up to start flying. And in that wobble, it's kind of moving and hitting more of the air when it's doing that. So it's causing it to stand up more. Where on that backhand, it's spinning faster. So it's not adjusting its course. It's just boom. It's on that right out of the gate. So those are the things that I think are the difference between the two. And it's why I'll use this as an example. Why I think the Dynamic Discs Raider was one of the best forehand distance drivers, but arguably one of the weaker backhand distance drivers. Hmm. For whatever reason, I think the speed of my forehand and what it called for, the Raider was perfect. Whatever it was doing was amazing. But when you spun it a little bit faster, it wanted to hold its turn and never come out. So that was something that I thought about a lot with the different discs. So I think that's probably what's happening, is that you might just want to have a different disc. Even like, don't think that you're going to get the same flight from the same disc on your backhand and your forehand. I know of like a dynasty for me is on a backhand is hyzer, flip, turn. And that's what it does. Like if I have to get a brand new one if I want hyzer flip to stay straight. But on a forehand, I can take it and hyzer flip it, turn, fade out. I can do a lot of that with a dynasty. And I think it's just that difference of spin that is causing that big difference between the two.
There you go. Nice. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. The next question is actually said, who won the bag? So if you, apparently someone noticed that we hit the 1,000 subscribers. So if you're just tuning in on YouTube, I can't remember if I mentioned if I'd already hit record, but I think I did. But maybe we had hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, but we're waiting until Robert gets back so we all can celebrate it together and announce the winner. So I'll have a winner announced in 2 weeks.
We'll be doing that.
Yeah, in 2 weeks.
On the 6th?
On the 6th, yes, because we're taking a break next Monday because it's actual Memorial Day. That way we can, you know, go out and enjoy ourselves, get drunk, and have a good time on Memorial Day. No, I just want to have a good time with family and friends and stuff over the weekend. So, all right, so let's jump into the next question. But before I do that, I want to tell you guys, I'm going to keep reminding you that I have an Airbnb house in Emporia, Kansas. I'm telling you, it's going to be a sponsor of the show.
Plug, dude. I respect the hustle. I laugh yes. because it caught me off guard, but I respect the hustle. Please,
so yes,
please keep
if you're
going.
Listening, if you have friends that are going to the Emporia area to play some disc golf, to visit the university, to go to, there's a GRS academy that people have gone to stay at the house. There's some people that stay, they just want to get away from the weekend. They lived 40 minutes away, but they wanted to get away for the weekend at some other place. And so they stayed at my house. So make sure you go on Airbnb, or the quickest way to find my house is go to my Instagram, Uncle Bobby Jr. And in the link in bio, there's a little thing that says stay in disc golf or stay in Emporia. I changed it to one of the disc golf meccas. So
nice. Thank
based
you.
On the feedback Thank from you. Eric. So anyway, you can go there, check it out. The rates vary. I had someone reach out to me and say, what's your rates? Well, the rates vary depending on if it's the weekend or if there's something coming up or something like that. So just try to book it out and stay there. And I've been working on making it more and more a disc golfy thing. So I'm actually going to have some pictures printed out that I took of disc golf and have them all over the house. So that'll be kind of the theme. It's kind of a disc
golf. Can I be on the pictures?
Of course you're going to be on the pictures. Yeah.
Sick. I can't wait.
Anyway, so check that out. Airbnb.com/H/Uncle Bobby Jr. All right. Next question. Dally P. Sally. He's talking Trilogy plastic. What is the stability across them? I love the Ballista Pro mold. I have base plastic Opto and Opto X Glimmer. How will the stability of the Gold and Gold X compare to all of these?
So I can just give him a general, since I was not a Ballista Pro thrower, but the Gold and Gold X. Gold should be less than Opto, should be about the same, but just slightly less than Opto. Gold X should be less than the Opto X Glimmer, but more overstable than the Opto. So it's going to land right in between the Opto and Opto X, which is really, really nice. So if you're a Ballista Pro guy, I know that the gold burst ones, some of the ones that were really domey, had a little bit more overstability as well. I know I played a practice round with Albert Tam, and he was jamming on some of his Ballista Pros, and gosh, he throws that disc so well. And he was throwing the very overstable Glimmer Opto X ones too, and he was able to hit them hard into some wind. So I know that those are some beefy discs with his power and what he's able to do. So that's generally how the Latitude 64 plastic works. Is I know they have the new ice plastic, which is supposed to be It's supposed to be like the newer blend of Lucid Opto, but it's a little stiffer, but not into the same stiffness of the X plastic. From what I understood, I felt a more ice like plastic Enforcer that Tristan Tanner was throwing, and it's a different shape than the Enforcers of the past, but the way he was throwing it, it flew very, very good. So Latitude might have found some really, really good plastic that molds up well and holds up the stability that a lot of the pros are looking for.
Excellent. Good deal. All right. So I mentioned earlier before we got to these two questions, I had a question for Eric Oakley and to our audience. I don't know if anybody, did you notice anybody really said much of anything?
Chaser said he was biased.
He was biased.
I know that much.
Oh, I see. So my question was, I had seen something real quick. I didn't read all the comments because you can get lost in the Facebook comments, but I saw some people were, I heard everything from it's a joke to the players don't care to what is this to this makes our sport look bad to everything. And basically what it was talking about is the trophy that the players got. And I thought it was a deco die or some sort of die, but I'm not sure if it was a die or some fancy process.
It was a nice die, but it kind of reminded me of Dymax. It didn't look anything different from that. So, yeah.
So give us your thoughts as a professional player. If you just battled it out and you won an Elite Series event and you were handed a Dymax disc that you would get at a trilogy challenge. I'm being facetious. I'm being sarcastic about it, but you get what I'm saying is that, I mean, I remember working at Dynamic Disc. We printed out hundreds of, you know, discs that were Dymax and that was the trophy, but it was for like C tiers and things like that. So what are your thoughts on Elite Series winning a trophy, a disc as a trophy?
Okay. Couple factors come into play as from the pro side is, there have been amazing trophies that I have seen being awarded. I've definitely wanted to win some of those really cool trophies. But something can be said about the money that might have gone into paying for a trophy goes into the event and the payout.
Yeah.
That, I think, at the current state of affairs, is more important than a really cool trophy in a lot of ways. There are certain events that have... there are certain events that just have people involved in the trophy making. Like, I know Mace Man is involved with... the USDGC, and he works with glass, so he's able to make a lot of really good trophies that I'm pretty sure he might be compensated for, or he might just be donating his time to because he works really hard at that tournament. So it's to the point where I'd almost rather see the money go into it until we get to the point where there's enough money into the payouts that taking $1,000 to get really good trophies, you don't even feel that. You don't feel that in the payout or in the event staff. Or I'd rather $1,000 go to pay the event staff rather than going to a trophy. There are a lot of things that I think that instead of paying for these really crazy trophies could go for. Now, I would imagine some events, you know, they don't have to pay for the trophies. They just, they are donated by artists or there are people involved that help make that happen. So that's fine. But that would be the whole argument. And winning an event is like the trophy. You're going to remember that, but you know it's on coverage. You're going to remember the moments more than you are this tangible thing. And there was some. I think Chaser mentioned it's like it's really difficult to if you're on tour to travel with a big trophy back. Yeah. Like it needs to be shipped home, and that can be a little frustrating. But
and expensive, I'm sure.
Yeah, and if the tournament's going to cover it, then that would be great if they could, because then you could have it sent home. And, you know, some players don't really have homes to send them home to. You know, they're in vans like that, and that takes up a lot of space. So I definitely think it won't happen again into the same capacity. I would rather them just say, hey, you've won it. Congratulations. Yo, hey, thanks. And instead of handing them a disc, which kind of feels... It feels lackluster. I get that. So I am not mad at OTB or MVP or anybody involved for doing so. Now, it just, this is just now a moment for us to learn from for future events that people kind of want to see something cool when somebody wins. So if you're, if you have the opportunity
The thing is some people, and it's unfortunately the squeaky wheel, the squeaky wheel, the greasy wheel, or the squeaky wheel gets the grease or whatever. I would imagine it varies from people to people. I agree with your point is like, you know, depending on how much money is spent, but that's the thing, we don't know the financials. We don't know if, a super fancy trophy, some guy was like, hey, I just want to make the trophy and I'll give you a discount. And so it didn't really cost that much for them to do it. We just never know that stuff. My opinion, the one thing, and then if some other people are like, man, if I won that tournament, I would love it. I don't think it's that the top players like Paige or anybody don't love them. And it's just like you said, they may find it difficult to display them anywhere, have a place for them. So I don't know. I just thought it was interesting to see the different opinions about it.
Yeah. And it's, let's not fault anybody. And again, it's just a place to learn because who knows? It could have been, they had really good trophies ordered that got damaged or delayed because there's so many different things that they at least got them something. Like, you know, we don't know the whole backings behind it. So,
I think something that's cool is at the Piney Woods Open in Texas, where they put your name on that stone.
Yeah, I'd rather something like that. Yeah. I think that's more important than a trophy. To see previous winners of an event could be very cool.
Because I've heard some pros that say that's what they want to see their name on that stone. So cool stuff, good stuff. All right, next one is from Jake Johnson. When you start to have a slump, be it putting, driving, or any other portion of the game, how do you work out of it? Just keep throwing until it goes away and stick to what you have always done, or do you try to address it right away and fix it?
I've picked up on a few things that have just worked in that have fixed the errors that I've had. So I try and remember those errors that I have to adjust going forward. And like, oh, I keep pulling my putts to the right. Cool. A little bit of hyzer putt fixes a lot of my putting woes. But generally, stay the course. The time you've put in, you've put hours into throwing, that it's probably better off that you keep, you just keep throwing, just keep doing it. You're having a bad day. You could have slept wrong, and your timing is just a little bit off, and you feel terrible, that nothing feels right. But then you could wake up the next day, you slept right, and you do the same exact thing, and you're butter all day. So I don't think it's worth changing much. Unless there's a glaring flaw in your form or stroke, then that's when we need to make a change.
There you go.
But I doubt that's the case if you've had good days.
All right. I think we got one more question, or no. I can't remember if this is... Nope, that's the whole question we already did. So, all right. Anything else we need to cover for this evening?
No, I guess the one thing I was going to add to the whole OTB conversation is that I really hope the Disc Golf Pro Tour and tour schedule shifts to a structure that allows us to have 50% open courses and 50% technical wooded courses.
What would you say it is right now?
I'd say the first part of the season is like 90% open courses.
Really?
Yeah. Jackson's like the only one. I guess, no, Piney Woods was open. Waco was...
Piney Woods was open? An open course? Did they not play Dogwood? Dogwoods?
They didn't play Dogwood. They played a modified.
Okay.
Called it the Thorn, I think. Hmm. So I would like to see that be a thing. Because it is difficult to allow for spectators to be on wooded courses. But I know that there are a lot of old school golfers, and there are a lot of golfers that believe that wooded courses makes us is more where the sport should be. Now, we have to play We have to play both sides. We need open courses. We need big spectators to bring in a lot more money. And what we need from more wooded courses is to move away from public parks. We need more wooded courses to be private properties and things of that nature that can and have the space and can have thousands of people out there and have the infrastructure to withstand that type of traffic to make it work. So we need more futuristic courses to come into play to help elevate the wooded courses to get to the level that we need them to. So this is a time thing that we need to get to, because looking at Swenson at OTB, they had it. The spectators were thought about in the design. There was places for them to hang out, to watch a few holes. There was places that never really you felt like you were on, like the spectators were on top of you. They were very off to the sides. It felt good, but you still felt like you could interact with them. You could still see them. They could see your shots and cheer for you. So it was really good. So that was one part about Leonard's design at Swenson for the OTB Open. It was very well done. And I wanted to say that I see it. I am not necessarily the biggest thrower, and I was still able to go out there and put up a score, and I could have put up scores that could have put me in a better contention to play well at the weekend. So I didn't feel like, oh my God, this is just Simon Lizotte's tournament to win because he throws far. No, mm-hmm. it was Simon Lizotte's tournament to win because he was the best disc golfer on the weekend.
Yeah.
Not because he threw far. It was because he executed the shots he needed to. Yes, far throwers, Vinny, Aaron Gossage, Anthony Barella, Simon Lizotte were the top four finishers, but they had to do the other parts. And I had plenty of birdie opportunities that could have put me there. I know other players who don't throw as far as those four players do also had plenty of opportunities that they didn't capitalize on. So hats off to the crew at OTB, Leonard, and everybody at the Pro Tour for, I think, putting down a really good event. And I just hope that we can transition some of our wooded courses to stay alive and or find new venues that can sustain the growth that we need in our sport, so it doesn't become so lopsided to open courses, and we can still retain that level of wooded courses that I do believe a lot of people like and enjoy.
Doc Sensen mentioned something. He said, I wish I would have, what did he say? I wish they could have had EMAC talking about Simon's statement. What was Simon's statement? Do you know?
Simon made a comment recently about how it's not fun going out and just throwing in the open air.
Yeah, I gotcha.
In reference to DDO. I don't remember the full conversation, but he wasn't wrong with what he said.
Yeah.
And it's just hard. I think the problem is the landscape of Emporia, Kansas doesn't allow for an elite level wooded course.
So the statements you're making about us needing to move to more wooded courses, or at least more of them during the tour, do you think that that's something that the Pro Tour is working on and maybe just not working fast enough? Or do you think they're working on it at all?
I think they are. I think they're considering that as an option, but they also have to weigh into account they need to make money. They need to make money, and having spectators makes money.
Yeah, there's no doubt there.
So that's, I think, a part of maybe what's happening now is that we're going to see these open courses, so then we can get into these private places, private courses, and allow for those to happen because we have the capital to do so. So I think that it's just we need to keep working at this because it's not easy. It's just not. It's not easy to run an event on a wooded course. It's not. A lot of wooded courses don't have the best cell service. Like it's. You know, we're losing the Beaver State Fling. We lost Masters Cup, two very technical places to play.
Yeah.
And they're now Silver Series. Those two tournaments used to be two of the biggest tournaments of the year. And now they're Silver Series. But that's because our sport is asking more of us and more of at the professional level to bring it to the masses, because that's what we need. So I think if we can keep working on it and finding places that can make it work, we'll get there. I think, you know, Northwood Black comes to mind as something that Nate Heinold's been able to work with. Yes, it's a public park, but he's been able to make use of the property into a really big factor. You know, I look at Fox Run and Brewster Ridge being two places that also have had just kind of the green light to make things happen on the properties for the most part, and to put out a really good event. Maple Hill is the same way. We need more courses like that. And that's not, they're not just everywhere. And, you know, it's, you know, why we keep going back to Emporia is because, you know, DD is going to put on a really good event, but the courses are okay. They're not, you know, they're what we need for right now, but I don't think they're going to be what we continue to want or need in the future.
Yeah, almost feels like events like Dynamic Discs Open, where I mean, it's geared and tailored toward the amateur, but it has the top pros there for the entertainment of the amateurs, and to bring people there and bring people to enjoy disc golf and check out Dynamic Discs, of course, and things like that.
You know, the event's going to be ran well. Like, that's the other part about it's DD. It's like,
yeah, it's always,
and if DD wasn't in Emporia and you put them into, I don't know where Eagles Crossing is, and that's the course they had, like, people would be like, yeah, this is the best place to ever play disc golf ever.
Right.
Because it's just such a great course. Right. I haven't played it yet, but from what I've heard, but if that's the case, if you had that type of terrain and that ability to do so, it might be a different conversation. So it's like, this isn't anything, this isn't a knock. It's just, the city of Emporia doesn't have the landscape that you'd need for maybe where our sport is going.
Right. I think that's just, my point was, I think events like that, and I'm sure they're sprinkled in different areas, when we move to the half and half that you want, a lot of the pros want, the top players want, they're always going to have to be a need for those type of events, that are open and things like that. So, but
we need a mixture. I think you're right. And that's why DDO will probably survive as one of the better open events when we lose, you know, we might lose Jonesboro, which is sad to me because I really like that event. We may be losing Waco to become a Silver Series, because that one's going to be, you know, that's a good partial open, partial wooded. We might, like, some events might shift off because they don't want to do the Pro Tour anymore. They might just, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? So the ones that want to continue to be at the high level, you know, we need to also embrace that. And I do think that Dynamic Discs and the DDO, the Dynamic Disc Open, will continue to be a big event. And I genuinely think everybody who works at that event is going to look at how it goes this year, how Worlds goes, and make adjustments to make it better for going forward. And if we're being real,
we always keep it real. We always keep it real.
The whole schedule needs to get reworked. Tournaments need to shift by months where they are currently. We should be in Florida early. We should be in California throughout the spring. California and Oregon and Washington throughout the spring. We shouldn't be touching the Midwest until the summer. I know it's hot, but we should have the whole section of the summer be for Jonesboro, for DDO, for Des Moines, for Preserve, for all of those. Just cluster them in the middle and let them be where they are. Because guess what? It's not going to be crazy windy. We might have to deal with some storms like we would in the spring, but it's going to be summer storms. It's going to be very different, and it's actually going to be entertaining to watch and play.
God, do you know how many gears have to shift for something stuff like that to happen?
Sure, but I get it.
But that's like, that is a huge, that would be a huge undertaking, because nobody wants to give up. So I know because I've been there. Part of meetings, there are some events that will not give up their spot and will not move away from where they're at when they are played, for obvious reasons and maybe not so obvious reasons. So, but yeah, I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying. That is a humongous, I would imagine the undertaking that would take to shift things
around. It'll be crazy, but I see it. I just think, you know, we need the PDGA and the Pro Tour just to be like, you know what, this is what's happening. Figure it out. There's going to be new events on tour because of this change. If you really think you want to run your event that's not a part of the Pro Tour and you're going to get as much pool, go for it. But there's like, we're likely going to be hundreds and hundreds of miles away from you the weekend before that. So you might not get the touring professionals to come to your event because of that fact.
So what's up next, Eric? Where are you traveling to next? What is the next pro tour? There's nothing on the Memorial weekend, correct?
No, nothing this weekend. I think there's SeaTac, which is here in Seattle, but I am not playing it. I'm just here to hang out with my homie behind me, Tyler. He was nice enough to open up his home with his girlfriend for me. And then going down to Portland. Tina's going to be showing up on Monday, so I'm going to have Tina with me for my birthday next week, which will be amazing. Portland opened that weekend at Glendevere and Blue Lake, which Blue Lake is, I'm stoked to be back there. We weren't able to go back for a couple of years because of the pandemic. And then the following weekend is Beaver State Fling, which, God, I cannot wait to go to Milo McIver. That place is magical.
Yeah.
It's a very, very special place.
Nice. Cool. So, yeah, still got a lot of disc golf left on the schedule for sure. For sure. LSW Open?
LWS?
LSW, yeah, LWS. That's the tax people, right?
Idlewild. Yeah, that's it's going to be Idlewild. Same tournament.
Wow, they're really stepping it up, huh? LWS?
Yeah, they're amazing.
That's awesome.
Great human beings over there, yeah. LWS.
So, if you're not sure what that is, LWS is came on the scene a few years ago helping disc golfers with their taxes and other financial planning. So, they in fact are, they do my taxes, or at least they're doing them for the first time. All right, gentlemen, are you just you, man? Gentleman?
Just a gentleman.
Just a gentleman. That's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank our YouTube audience for tuning in. Appreciate you checking in on the new time. Thanks for subscribing. Again, we're not going to be here on Monday, Memorial Day. We're going to skip a Monday, but we'll be here June 6th. We'll give away that Combat Ranger bag. And we'll have, for sure, should have Robert back on and have the regular show. So keep sending those questions in, and then we'll see if maybe next time Eric can have another TV show going on in the background so we can watch some TV as well. I was trying to figure out what he was watching.
Yeah, I was too. I don't know. All
right.
I think it's Goliath. I think it's called Goliath.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you on the next show.
Cheers.